Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I am your host, Mark Levine, proud to join you from the Center for American Progress, live in Washington, D.C. So you know how it is, right? You're sitting there and you're complaining about how corrupt the Republican Party is and how they take all this money from the Koch brothers. And there's that uncle at Thanksgiving. You know, the Democrats take lots of money. And then you go and you talk about how much of a liar Donald Trump is. And you hear, well, Hillary Clinton's a liar too. And then you go and you say, well, the Republican Party has moved so far to the right. And you hear, well, the Democratic Party's moved pretty far to the left. They all talk like that. You know, all those naysayers, they all talk like that. Funny how that works. And then, you know, you are talking about how the Republican Party doesn't believe in science. And you hear, well, the Democratic Party doesn't believe in science either. And let's see, one more. You talk about how the Republican Party has gone off the deep end and you don't trust any Republican politicians. And you hear, I don't trust any politicians. Washington is terrible. Throw all the bums out. How many times have you heard that? I can't count. For me, it's clearly in the thousands, tens of thousands. Every time you make a legitimate complaint about something that's going on in the Republican Party, you hear, well, the Democrats do it too. Well, guess what, folks? They don't. We don't. At least not near to the extent that the Republicans do. And the problem is that the press, the media, trying to be fair, trying to avoid liberal bias, will create what we might call false equivalence. They bring on a Republican strategist. They bring on a Democratic strategist. They bring on someone who says that climate change isn't happening and someone who says it is. Kind of like bringing on a mathematician to say 2 plus 2 equals 4 and bringing on your 3-year-old son who says that 2 plus 2 is 22 and treating them as if they're equal arguments. You could have one scientist saying the earth is round, another scientist saying the earth is flat. This is a real problem in the media, and it's not a new one. I've talked often on this show about whom I compare Donald Trump to, and for all the somewhat interesting comparisons to fascism, to Mussolini and others, I think the best comparison is to a good old American demagogue by the name of Joe McCarthy. It's funny. Joe McCarthy was obviously before my time, but he's really not that studied so much in American history. Ask anyone of a certain age, and they remember Joe McCarthy very well. Someone in their 70s, I guess it would probably have to be today. But whereas we study what happened before Joe McCarthy, we study World War II, we study the Great Depression, we study Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, very few people talk about that period of time in the early to middle 1950s, when we had the Red Scare, when Americans were busy fingering other Americans. In this case, it wasn't for being Muslim or for being Mexican. It was for being a communist. In fact, people have so forgotten Joe McCarthy that when young people rally in massive numbers in defense of a socialist, Bernie Sanders, people in their 70s shake their heads. They remember a time when if you said you were a socialist, you would lose your job, you'd be boycotted, you'd be thrown out of government, and you might just be investigated by the House Committee on Un-American Activities. Yes, that's what it was called, the House Committee on Un-American Activities. Because if you believed in communism, you were un-American. Now, to be fair, the Soviet Union, whether in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, or 80s, or 20s, was a brutal, awful place where millions of people were murdered and put in gulags, and God knows I ain't defending that. I mean, Stalin probably is only the second greatest madman in America, in world history, having probably killed just under Hitler, but it's really close, and do we really have to compare? But communism, particularly small-c communism, was never or should never have been conflated with Soviet communism. Early communists largely believed in equality and became communists because they cared about the same issues, honestly, that Bernie Sanders talks about. They cared about income inequality. They cared about unions. The Communist Party was one of the only places in America where blacks could get equal treatment in the 20s and 30s. In fact, if you look at a lot of early African-American writers, they're praising the Communist Party. Not because they support the Soviet gulags, to be sure, but because at least the Communist Party in America was defending a lot of the same causes you might hear Bernie Sanders talk about today. They were socialists. Now, some of them were Soviet sympathizers, and I don't really sympathize with the Soviet sympathizers, but some of them were simply people complaining about, oh, in the 1920s, too much wealth given to the top 1%. Sound familiar? Too little support given to unions, and definitely too little support given to civil rights, or women's rights, for that matter. Well, I've talked in this show before about the joke, and it was a joke, it was a late-night drunk joke, that got Joseph McCarthy attached to communism. Anytime you want me to repeat the story, call in, and I'll be happy to do so. But I want to go to the next step. What happened after that? When people were thrown out of their jobs, when people were called up, actors, very famous actors, successful Broadway actors and writers, playwrights like Arthur Miller. I mean, some of the great American playwrights who wrote Death of a Salesman. You know, the story of poor Willie Loman, a salesman who's, you know, beaten upon by the system. I mean, these great American themes were called up before the House Committee on Un-American Activities and called a card-carrying communist. I give them the alliteration. That's pretty good. A card-carrying communist. And called a pinko. And it's, you know, caused Americans to run away from any sort of belief in social institutions. It caused really a backlash to the right. It was kind of the first time the Republican Party started really going off the deep end to the right and accusing anyone and everyone of all kinds of conspiracy theories. And even if there were two or three Soviet spies in the U.S. government, millions of Americans were not spying for the Soviet Union. Yes, millions of Americans may have had sympathy for people who were the underclass, but that didn't mean they were on Stalin's side. In any case, at the time, the press, the media, had real trouble with false equivalents. This is maybe the first time in American history, or certainly the first time I'm aware of, you have a more modern press. Again, we're talking about 1950, 1952, 1954, 1956. The press is just coming of age. Indeed, it's the newspaper press. Television's still a little too early. So newspapers wanted to show both sides. You had the Republican Party, enthralled by this demagogue named Joe McCarthy, afraid to speak against him. Even Eisenhower, the president, was afraid to speak against him because he was basically saying that not just Harry Truman, the Democrat, but even Dwight D. Eisenhower, the Republican, had his government full of communists that needed to be drummed out. It was all false, but again, just because something's false doesn't mean the idea doesn't have power. And Joe McCarthy would go out and try to destroy people's reputations. So, on the front page of the New York Times, trying to be fair, you see, they'd have on the left side, top front page, Joe McCarthy declares diplomat Owen Lattimore to be a communist. And then an equal type on the right-hand side, Owen Lattimore says, I am not a communist. And then you hear McCarthy's argument for Owen Lattimore is a communist and Owen Lattimore's argument for that he's not a communist. But here's the problem. Owen Lattimore was not a communist. He just wasn't. He certainly wasn't a card-carrying member of the Communist Party. nor had he been to any communist meetings. All he'd done is perhaps express a little sympathy for poor people. But somehow McCarthy's headlines, Owen Lattimore expresses some sympathy for poor people, it's not enough to get him run out of government. But you see the problem. The press is trying to be fair. They're trying to present both sides of the argument. But there was only one side to the argument. He wasn't a communist. So rather than report the truth, McCarthy lies and claims that Owen Lattimore is a communist. They showed both sides. Donald Trump says all Mexicans are rapists. Mexicans deny that all or even most Mexicans are rapists. That's false equivalence. Republicans deny climate change is real. Democrats say climate change is real. That's false equivalence. Climate change is real. There is no argument on the other side. Right? Columbus says Earth is round. Columbus's shipmates say Earth is flat. Sometimes, in a two-sided debate, one side is right. Not subjectively right, but objectively right. 2 + 2 = 4. And you can argue with me till you're blue in the face, and you can bring up all kinds of emotion. You can call me all kinds of dirty names. You can even point a gun at me and threaten to shoot me. But 2 + 2 = 4. And that's true even if you force me at gunpoint to pretend that it's not. It still is. Truth is truth. I firmly believe there is an objective truth out there. I'm not relativist when it comes to truth. We've got to keep these principles in mind. Now that Hillary Clinton, an imperfect human being that she is, but someone I think will make a fine United States president, goes up against a lying, scheming showman, a blowhard, someone for whom truth is only relative, someone who changes his positions every 15 minutes, someone who makes up vicious, vicious lies, and then the press has to debunk them. You see how it works for poor Owen Lattimore, who lost his job. McCarthy said he's a communist. Half the people believed it. Owen Lattimore said he wasn't. Half the people didn't believe it. Republicans say climate change isn't real, even though all the scientists say it is. Democrats say it is real. Half believe it, half don't, particularly in the polarized world in which we live. Democrats say 2 + 2 = 4. Republicans say 2 + 2 = 3. Half believe it, half don't believe it. We can't do that with Donald Trump. Donald Trump, let's never forget, was probably the only, I hate to call him mainstream because he really isn't, but one of the only, let's say, known names to actually give credence to the birther movement, to claim that our president of the United States, Barack Obama, was not born in Hawaii, but was part of some God knows secret Manchurian candidate racist conspiracy to sneak a Kenyan baby in the United States, who, by the way, under the same rule that would let Ted Cruz run for president, could be president anyway because his mom's American. But forget all that. He's black. He's a Kenyan Muslim socialist. And it doesn't matter that it's all a lie, because significant numbers, at least of Republicans, believe this lie. Now, some of you may just say, well, Republicans are stupid. But you have to understand that people today get their media from where they want it. They choose their news, and therefore they choose their facts, right? There are people in the United States that actually think that George Bush won the 2000 election. Not that he was selected by the Supreme Court, that he actually got more votes in Florida in the United States. It's not objectively true, but you drum a line in people's heads enough times, people believe it. It's kind of like the parable of the emperor with no clothes. Do you know that story? I'll tell it after the break. If you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. So you know your friend that says, I hate all politicians, and then cites some things that a bunch of Republicans have done, maybe 10 Republicans and one Democrat? You know the one that says both parties have gone off the deep end and then describes all the things Republican parties have done and then describes a couple ways in which the Democrats are imperfect but not crazy? That's what I mean by false equivalence. Got a bunch of calls on the line, 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Mike from Arizona on line two. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I'm wondering if you can name one person in the mainstream media, I'm talking about the three or four main networks that have this, the brass gonads that Edward R. Murrow had during the McCarthy era, which you just talked about.
By the way, let me just share, Mike, because I know you know, but my listeners may not know because a lot of them, frankly, were born after 1954. What happened was, folks, Joe McCarthy went so far off the deep end, calling increasingly numbers of people communists until he was basically calling Harry Truman and Eisenhower, close to calling them communists, until finally Edward R. Murrow, who's really the forerunner of Walter Cronkite at CBS News. Many know who Walter Cronkite was. He was the one who, there was a time when Walter Cronkite was on the air when everyone trusted a single news source, namely Walter Cronkite. Edward R. Murrow was that guy before Cronkite. And he basically came on the news, on the CBS Evening News, and called Joe McCarthy out. I don't know that we have seen anything like it. The only comparison I can give is maybe 15 years later when, or 20 years later when, 15 years, when Walter Cronkite came on air and called out the Vietnam War. It's extremely rare for someone. I don't know any Edward R. Murrows, I'm sorry to say, Mike, but I will say
that. I will say this
in a tiny defense. The media today is much more fractured and fragmented than it was in 1954. There were ABC, CBS, and NBC. That was it. Maybe PBS. Now we have, if you go to Google and you're a liberal, it will show you a bunch of liberal news sites. If you go to Google and you're a conservative, it will show you a bunch of conservative websites. We live in these two parallel worlds where there isn't anyone that anyone trusts like Edward R. Murrow or Walter Cronkite anymore. So that's part of the problem. So I can blame the media for not having one, but I can also suggest that in our postmodern society, Edward R. Murrow doesn't exist. He can't exist, can he?
I think part of the reason is because all the major news corporations, are owned by major conglomerates that actually, I think, pretty much dictate the tone and attitude of the news people.
You know, that's true. I'll give you that. But I don't know that it was that different in the 1950s. I think they were big conglomerates then, and they certainly didn't show a lot of news that we would want them to show. Partly, we do need a hero.
CBS was pretty much its own corporation back then.
Well, that's true. It wasn't owned by Time Warner. They probably had a little more independence. You're absolutely right, Mike.
Yeah.
Stick around if you like. Got a bunch of other callers on the line. 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin, talking about the problems of false equivalence in the Clinton-Trump race, but really all over the place, particularly with today's Republican and Democratic Party. You have one party trying to make government work, not always succeeding, to be fair, and can be definitely criticized for when it fails. But one party trying to make the people's representatives serve them appropriately, and one party trying to tear the government down, trying to make it fail. Indeed, the leader of the party, at the time was Mitch McConnell in 2009, saying within a month of Barack Obama being elected, we're going to make him fail. We want him to fail. My major goal is not taxes or the environment or schools or healthcare. My main goal is to make sure that Barack Obama is a one-term president. Or the, I guess, spiritual leader of the Republican Party, a guy by the name of Rush Limbaugh, saying, I want him to fail, wanting our newly elected president to fail. Not after he was elected and, you know, was done some things he didn't like, but right out of the box. You have a party of constructivism, trying to make the country better, and a party of nihilism, a party of no, a party of destruction. And the media is treating them as if they're equivalent. Well, they're not. Guess what? It's really hard for two people in a marriage to make it work if one wants the marriage to succeed and the other doesn't. The one that doesn't usually wins. If two people are trying to build a car, well, one is trying to build the car. At the same time, the other one's trying to destroy the car. Guess who usually wins? I give you a hint. Not the one trying to build a car. Trying to build a car takes effort, takes complexity, takes a certain amount of precision, putting all the pieces together. Destroying a car, that's a really easy thing to do. The Democrats have a tough job. The Republicans have an easy job. And then when the car fails, right? The Democrats are trying to build the car. The Republicans are throwing firebombs in and puncturing the tires. And the car doesn't work. Then people say, well, you know, politicians, they can't build a car. Politicians, they can't build a government. They can't make government work because the two parties working aren't working together. Well, one party wants to work together. That's the Democrats. The Republicans don't. That is false equivalence. I went on for a bit, and I want to give Mike from Arizona a chance to say his piece. He mentioned Errol Morrow, and I went off for a while. So, Mike, you've got the floor. Tell me all you want to say.
Just wanted to make a couple more comments.
Go ahead.
Concerning the news media, even cable networks like MSNBC have fallen to the Donald Trump reality shows, which is basically what it is on MSNBC right now. Everything's a joke. They give Donald Trump more than equal time. In fact, he probably gets probably 80% of the time when it concerns the presidential race. And they're laughing. It's funny to them.
Well, Donald, Donald Trump suffers from it. He's a clown.
That I had respect for, like Rachel Maddow,
yeah.
Lawrence O'Donnell, Chris Matthews, those people. They're laughing too, and I'm really
well. You know, I tell you, sometimes things get so sad and awful that laughter is a human reaction. You know, have you ever had something so terrible? It's a dark humor, is what it is. You know, something so terrible happens to you that all you can do is kind of laugh and shake your head.
Yeah.
I'm not saying. I mean, look. As much as I detest Donald Trump and don't want to be president, I have to be objective, I have to be fair, and I have to say he's an entertaining person. It's a very dark humor, but he's amusing to watch even as he works to destroy the country. And that's a weird dynamic. And it's frankly why I think he's gotten a lot of votes, because he's entertaining. People said of George Bush and Al Gore, they said, well, Bush will be a lousy president, but he'd be fun to have a beer with. And Al Gore, he'd be a great president, but he's boring. He plays with computers. He wants the internet to work. I mean, who wants to talk about that? I want to talk about George Bush's cocaine binges, right? So the more people are looking not for a president, but for an amusing, you know, you go out to bars, you got that group of friends, and you're really glad that the Joker's along, because yeah, he drinks too much, and yeah, he might even put his hands down the shirt of a woman and make her scream and cry, and it's terrible what he does, but you know, he's good for a laugh, and when he's not there, it's kind of boring when y'all go out together. You know what I'm talking about.
I think some people really do, however, want to destroy this country, and those are the people that will vote for Donald Trump. They hate the government, especially the federal government.
I hear you. So I hear you. But I'm trying to wrap my head around this phenomenon, and so thank you for helping me, Mike, and thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Let's go to another person in Arizona, Charlie in Phoenix on line one. Hey, Charlie, how are you?
Hey, how you doing today?
Thanks for calling
in. I have a question. When you said that Donald Trump said that all Mexicans are rapists,
what he said was,
can you show me where that fact is?
I'll tell you exactly what he said. He said,
No. You said that Trump said all Mexicans are rapists.
And then
you
he
just said it 5 minutes ago.
about.
Well, what he said was after that.
I know what he
first
said.
He said it. No, first
hey,
he said it.
I know.
And then and then he qualified it. So I'm going to do the same.
No, you can't first, qualify
well, that's what Trump did.
No. Then we're
Trump said Mexicans, they're rapists, they're thieves, and some, I assume, are nice
everybody
people.
Everybody knows what he said.
Okay.
But now you're playing the high card of honesty in media, and you and then on the other side of your mouth, you spout that out.
Did he say he wanted to ban all Muslims?
No. You guys in opinion radio are as dishonest screen.
Yeah. This illustrates the problem, right? We're having a discussion. We can have a discussion. If you want me to play the full Donald Trump quote, I'm happy to do that. We know what he said. He said the Mexicans, they're liars, thieves. I have to get the exact quote because I'm doing it based on memory. I think he said they were thieves and rapists. And then he said, and some, I assume, are nice people, which is a nice way of saying all of them are terrible, but I'm going to assume for the sake of argument that maybe some of them are okay. You know, all blacks are terrible people. But, you know, I got a couple friends, so not them. There's a huge difference between saying you should presume Mexican are rapists and then maybe a couple are good and saying you should presume all people are good and maybe a couple are bad. But it's this anger. What's this guy angry about? What's he so angry about? What are Donald Trump people so angry about? They're probably angry about the fact that most of them are uneducated white men who are having a tough time in our economy. Frankly, they should go to Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton to help them and help all Americans do better in the economy. But instead, and this is something, again, I've talked about, there's this divide and conquer, right? Instead of blaming the billionaires like Donald Trump for misusing the system, to actually mistreat people. And that's what Donald Trump does. That's what he has a history of doing in business. He has a history of outsourcing. The same thing he complains about, that's what he does. He has a history of mistreating women, right? Including a woman, if you've seen this, the woman who had to breastfeed her baby, and he said he was disgusted by that and pointed his finger at her and said, get out of here. This is a man who is very much stoking anger, but including for things he's done himself. Let's go to Jim in Albuquerque on line 5, I believe it is. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hi, Mark. Good afternoon, and thank you for having me on.
Thanks for calling in.
I wanted to thank you, sir. Congratulations with your election, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
We need more people like you in there.
I'm doing my best.
I had an epiphany. Mark, I have two friends of 35 years, and both neocon hardheads that I slam skulls with, trying to get them to see my side. And I recently, over the last 2-3 years, started mailing books to them. This new one, Lies Incorporated, another one, the Benghazi host by Rabin Hoft.
They're not going to read your books.
Crisis Economics.
Jim, they're not going to read your
I'm
books.
Sorry?
They're not going to read your books. They're not going to crack open the cover, are they?
Oh, they do. They read
they
it.
Do?
And they argue with me.
They really
they
read
argue.
It? You get credit that they actually get them to read the books.
I said the autobiography of Walter Cronkite. He reads it. He picks one section out and he starts arguing with me why Walter Cronkite is wrong. And I'm like, dude, this is Walter Cronkite you're arguing with. You need to re-examine your perspectives on reality because you don't get it.
See,
these
Jim,
guys are writing the books.
They've done
the experts.
They've done interesting psychological studies on human beings. For example, they took this is a fascinating psychological study just came out where they took different army groups. They're training them to think well in wartime, and they would give a complex, you know, complicated scenario about how you would take a hill or how you would achieve an objective. And there were many right answers, and they split the groups up into 5 or 6 groups. And the 5 or 6 groups came up with, they were smart people, they came up with different ways to do the same task using different strategies, different tactics. And then they would give the groups more information. And the information would suggest that option A, if they chose option A, they would give him information that suggested option C was best. And for the ones who chose option C, they would give information that suggested option D was best. And D, they would suggest A. You get the point. They would give them, like, real time. And a war is real time, right? You start to take the hill, and suddenly you see people retreating from that hill. Or suddenly you see that there's a big storm. Or whatever it is, things come up in the middle of things. And what they found was that where there was no bias at the get-go between choosing scenario A, B, C, or D, you know, they were all equally decent scenarios. Once a team of people, or even once an individual, committed out loud publicly to a certain option, when new information came in, instead of taking the new information and reevaluating the option, they spent all their time saying why the new information was wrong. It was a fascinating psychological study. If you gave all the information at once, well, people obviously chose option B because all the information pointed to option B. But if you gave information that pointed to option A at first, and then someone publicly aloud said, I support option A, and then you gave B, 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 they usually kept to their guns. And that's sort of a human way of defending what we've said publicly. It's one reason, by the way, in a jury trial, why the lawyers are constantly telling a jury, don't make up your minds till you hear everything. Don't make up your minds till you hear everything. Don't even say out loud what you're thinking until you hear everything. Because once you say it out loud, weirdly enough, our brains commit to our prior commitment, even when objectively it's clear we're wrong. And that's a phenomenon we do see in all of humanity, and it's one we have to be very, very careful about.
Well, this was the question that stunned him. I asked him, how many books have you written? And he got angry because he hadn't written any. And I said, that means you're not an expert. I send you the books of the experts, and what college master's degrees and PhDs do is adjust their opinion to reality based upon research of peer-reviewed journals. This is how the pursuit of scientific truth works.
I hear you, Jim. Although I wouldn't want to praise everyone that's written a book, because I wouldn't want that to be the
standard. No.
But you're right. Scientific peer-reviewed journals absolutely are the standard in science. And here's the thing about science. Scientists, a true scientist, not only is willing to admit he or she is wrong, but almost jumps at the chance, because if you're wrong and you can prove you're wrong, suddenly a whole new scientific sphere is open for you. I mean, Einstein overturned Newtonian physics and found, and he was more right than Newton. But he had to prove Newton wrong. He couldn't just say, you know, Newton, an apple fell on your head. You're crazy. He had to actually prove it, and using facts and evidence. And all I can say is that opinions not derived via logic are rarely dissuaded via logic. The guy who called in was extremely emotional and angry at me, right? He couldn't have a conversation with me. If people want to reasonably disagree with me, I welcome them on the show. But all that emotion, all that anger masks a guy who knows he's wrong and just can't adequately explain it and therefore resorts to obscenities and things like that.
Can't go to option B, can he?
No, he really can't. It's kind of sad. One of the reasons, by the way, I love talking to high school students. I regularly talk with, I've talked now with more than 10,000 17 and 18-year-olds in groups of about 200. I debate conservative in front of them. I love that age. Love that age, because at 17 and 18, kids are old enough to understand complex issues, but young enough to still have an open mind. And by the time you get to be like 25 or 30, that unfortunately leaves most of us. So love to teach kids that age. And thanks for your call, Jim. I appreciate it.
Thank you for everything you're doing for us, man. Thank you.
I'm doing what I can. Stay touch. Keep listening. MarkLevineTalk.com. I do TV too. Thanks, Jim, for calling in. I got to take a break. I got a whole bunch of you on the line. I will get to each and every one of you if you'll stick around. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar, and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine. That, of course, was Donald Trump. That was his famous comment. That was the comment that brought him from a candidate with zero support to be the front runner of the Republican Party. Apparently, nothing builds a Republican brand like racism. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have... First of all, Mexico's sending these people? Really? They just, like, line them up and push them across the border? Okay, that's a little crazy. But they're sending people that have lots of problems. They're bringing those problems. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, he doesn't really know for sure if any are good people. Right? There's no, he doesn't have evidence that any Mexican-American's a good person. But some, a few, maybe he assumes... He's never met a good Mexican-American in his life, but some he's just going to assume, because he doesn't hang out with any good Mexican-Americans, he'll just assume for the sake of argument that some are good people. Is that a racist comment? Damn right it's a racist comment. And think about what a dog whistle comment is. Think about what the people hear. They hear Mexicans are bad. Well, I got news for Donald Trump. Maybe news for you. Did you know that undocumented immigrants... and undocumented Mexican immigrants commit crimes at a lesser rate than native-born American citizens? This country would be safer if we deported everyone born here, all 300 million of us, and left the undocumented alone because, at least on average, they commit crimes at a lesser rate. One more comment from Donald Trump, and then I promise to get to the calls. He says, but you have people coming in, and I'm not just saying Mexicans. I'm talking about people that are from all over. They're killers and rapists, and they're coming into this country. Well, are all undocumented immigrants completely crime-free? No, Donald. Yes, I'm sure there's a couple rapists in there. Some, I assume, are rapists, Donald. But to say that the vast majority are criminals and only a couple are good is exactly wrong. That's the point I was trying to make. Christian in Palm Springs, line four. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Long-time listener, first-time call. I read this book, Truth and Duty, The Press, The President, and The Privilege of Power by Mary Mapes. Mary Mapes and Dan Rather worked on a project
I remember that.
About George Bush's being AWOL from his...
That was one of my first radio shows. You know, if you go to my very early radio shows, marklevinetalk.com, you'll find in the first year, I did an expose based on documents, real documents, showing that, George W. Bush was AWOL. And
right.
Dan Rather got in trouble for saying the truth.
Yes, and after they presented it, the conservative uproar was so vicious, false, and bad that... they fired Mapes and three or four others. Dan Rather resigned. And to say simply, if that's going to encourage anyone to go into the doings of the big guys, I think it squelched it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. It's an interesting case. We're running out of time, but just very briefly. Basically, Dan Rather did discover a truth, and then some of the documents to support that truth were not accurate documents. But there were other documents that absolutely supported that truth, and it got caught up, and everyone just said, Dan Rather's a liar, because they didn't want to hurt George Bush. And yeah, it ruined his career. Thanks for your call, Christian. I got only, 40 seconds left. Sorry, Josh from Pittsburgh, line three. Make your point real quick.
Hey, I'd just like to say that Bernie Sanders, when he implements this minimum wage, you know, it's going to be a wonderful thing because, you know, when it's actually a living wage that you can survive on, you know, people won't have to go to trade school. They won't have to learn a skill. They can just
I hear you, Josh. Sorry to cut you off. We're just running out of time. I fully support a living wage, you know, whether it's Hillary Clinton's $12 with localities allowing for 15 or Bernie's full 15, these are good things. I think Hillary's maybe a little more achievable, but God knows, 725, you cannot live on that kind of wage. And now the Donald's changing his mind too. Who knows what he thinks? But I guarantee you the Democrat nominee will do a better job on that score. Thank you, everyone. I'll be back on Wednesday. This is Mark Levine signing off.